Welcome, everyone, to episode 403 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and trade season is here. We had our first major blockbuster-ish, not really, Derrick Rose got traded. So we'll talk about that. And then we're going to get into some of the other guys, mostly on rebuilding teams who might be up for grabs between now and the March 25th deadline, including one very big name who has been floating around the rumor mill lately. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Now, we are recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is someone who I know is very excited to talk more about Derrick Rose. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. Let's get the Derrick Rose thing out of the way, because I want to dig in so much deeper on some of the remaining subjects that we have going, because I think we have a lot of talking ahead of us when it comes to Orlando.
Ooh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. There's a teaser. So hang in through the Derrick Rose stuff if you are equally disgusted by him as a person, because we will get to other trade targets later. But yes, the first big trade since the James Harden deal, Derrick Rose reunited with Tom Thibodeau in New York, second stint with the Knicks as well. So all sorts of exciting stuff. The Knicks sent back to Detroit Dennis Smith Jr. and a 2021 second round pick from Charlotte. That's probably going to be in the early to late 30s, early 40s, somewhere around there.
Which actually could be a good pick.
Yeah, very well. So let's hit it from the Knicks side first. I mean, they didn't give up a ton of value here. I think that's the first thing we need to, like, you can't really hate this deal in terms of value, because Dennis Smith was doing nothing for them. He's going to be a free agent after this year. I can't imagine they're going to re-sign him. I mean, right. Sure, it's a pick in, you know, again, late 30s, early 40s, but Derrick Rose is still a productive NBA player at the moment. So value-wise, it's fine. But what do you think about this deal in terms of Rose's fit with the Knicks and how much he'll help them? And did it make sense to give up anything in a season where, you know, realistically, they're chasing the eighth seed?
Right. I mean, so there are two ways to look at it, right? One is it's the whole Tom Thibodeau angle. You know, he goes to a system where Tom Thibodeau is in charge. He knows that system, so he'll come in immediately and be a presence. He'll be able to understand the schemes. That's in and of itself an asset, because you won't have to spend all the time getting a player acclimated to a new system. So he'll basically come in right off the bat, ready to roll. Knowing the sets, like, he might come in there and like teach some of the new guys, you know, here's what Tibbs is going to do, even though the new guys have spent the entire year playing with him. Which, you know, it, depending on how he attacks that role, could be an asset. But I am still a little bit surprised, because I kind of want to see the Knicks give their young guys more burn. Mm-hmm. And this all boils down to me in terms of Emmanuel Quickley.
Yep.
Like, is Quickley going to experience a minutes cut because of the presence of Rose? If so, then it's a bad trade. Like, and I'm sorry that I'm being that harsh, but it just is, because Quickley is a significant part of your future. To be perfectly honest with you, I look at him as a future starter and a guy who could blossom into like a fringe all-star talent. I think he's that good. So I wouldn't want to handcuff him to a lesser role when he's already doing fairly well. Now, if Rose comes in and that puts Quickley in a type of off-guard situation where he is freed up to shoot more, which he's really, really good at, by the way, okay, I could see that. I could live with that. I think that could be an interesting setup. If he becomes more of a shooter and more of a scorer, and he's slightly unleashed in an off-ball role, run with it. Then I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big question, is what do they envision Derrick Rose as? Is he going to take over as the starting point guard and bump Elfrid Payton out of that unit? Does he take over as their primary sixth man? And does he push a young guy like Quickly out of the rotation, who over the last three games, Quickly hasn't topped 20 minutes per game. So he's already seeing his minutes cut relative to, you know, he's just kind of gone through these swings this year where he'll play 20 plus in a couple games in a row, and then Tibbs will not play him for a few games or not play him as much, and it goes back over the 20-25 minute mark and then right back down. So I think it's hard for him to get any sort of rhythm without having a sort of consistent role. And we've seen him be extremely productive when he does play the requisite minutes. I mean, 31 points in only 24 minutes, shot 9 of 18 from the field and 5 of 8 from deep in a 3-point loss to Portland on January 24th. You know, 25 points in back-to-back games, shot over 50 from the field in both of those games. So, yeah, I'm with you in thinking, like, if this cuts into Quickly's playing time in any way, that's just not helpful from a long-term perspective. This season, right. I mean, we've been praising the Knicks for not rushing anything this offseason. When they had a lot of cap space, they could have splurged on guys who would have helped them in the short term, but not the long term. Instead, it seemed like they were taking a long-term view, but now that they're surprisingly competitive, right now we're recording this, they are currently the number 8 seed. So now that they're competitive, and now that Julius Randle is having all-star caliber season, you know, RJ Barrett looks a lot better than he did last year, does that incentivize them to speed up the timetable? It should not, but if it does and Derrick Rose is taking minutes from Quickly, that's not great. If he bumps out like Alec Burks or Austin Rivers, yeah, that's fine. Whatever. I mean, it's, you know, it's all the same in the sense that none of these guys factor into the long-term plan. So,
right.
You know, if you're just having a competition for minutes, it's like the two of those three who are the most productive get to play. Cool. That's fine. But, yeah.
Well, you said those guys are not factoring into the long term. You know, I would agree with you that it appears that way, but it's still Tibbs.
Yeah.
And Tibbs will still have a say, as any coach should, when it comes to off-season acquisition. You know, like, do you not think that this was a Tibbs move for Rose? Like, he's obviously going to try to, you know, get management to re-sign Rose in the summer as well. So why not Alec Burks? And then, you know, it's just, I don't want this to be the starting point of the Knicks going all in on the now. That is basically what this trade boils down to for me. If this is a starting signal of the Knicks going, well, you know what? It's going all right. Let's cash in our chips. Then no. If they just try to balance out like veterans and young guys, that's cool. But yeah, I'm a little bit skeptical because I know how much Tibbs loves Rose, and I know that Quickly could definitely be a guy who ends up seeing a lot of pine, and that definitely makes me a little bit queasy given how good Quickly is. I guess we'll see in a month. I think we should reevaluate in about 30 days' time.
Yeah, that's a good call. I mean, it just could boil down to they don't trust anyone behind Payton as a full-time on-ball guard. Like, Quickly, Burks, Rivers could all create for themselves to some extent. But maybe they just wanted more of like a dependable veteran presence off the bench, in which case, I get it. But I'm with you. We should circle back, you know, once we hit the All-Star break and see how Rose has factored into the rotation to before we can really judge this trade either way from the Knicks side.
Right.
What did you think about it from the Pistons' perspective?
Like, it's fine, I guess. I like the second rounder. I don't know if there's anything that can be said about Dennis Smith Jr. because he's barely played over the past couple years. He seems like a guy who just does not have the necessary basketball IQ to consistently stay on the court. I hope that changes because I always hope for the best in young players. But good Lord, has that fall from a pretty stable rookie season to now been been drastic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good thing for him is that he's walking into what I would say probably the weakest backcourt in the league. I mean, I'm thinking of like Orlando because they have the injuries, but even still, I'd take Cole Anthony over anyone in the Pistons backcourt right now.
Like, don't go to their basketball reference, the Pistons, that is, unless you're already there.
Uh-huh.
Name me their backcourt. Like, name me their depth chart in the backcourt.
Oh, boy. So, DeLon Wright.
Yeah.
Killian Hayes, who is hurt.
Right.
We have Svi.
We yeah.
had Derrick Rose, but he is no longer there.
Right.
Are they playing Wayne Ellington as a two?
I think they are. Okay. I can go in and look at like position breakdown, but I would assume that 6'4" Wayne Ellington is being played as a two. Isn't he injured right now though?
Oh, is he? Well, we're gonna bring him back up in a little bit, but
all right.
Oh boy, after it, Rodney Magruder.
Oh, you hit on the big ones. Okay. And by the way, Wayne Ellington is 98% at the two.
All right, there we go. All right, yeah. So I stand,
well done.
I stand by my, that is definitely the weakest backcourt in the league. So, I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. has a chance, especially with Killian Hayes hurt. Like, he'll have a chance to earn minutes, I think.
Yes, but...
right, I don't know if that's a good thing, but...
Well, I mean, one thing is earning minutes in a backcourt that's horrible. I mean... I don't know if it'll just be this token minutes that he'll be given. He'll put up a lot of empty stats and then he'll be gone afterwards. Honestly, I don't care. It's fine. I always support young players getting a chance. If this is him getting a chance and if he makes the most of it, that's a great story. That's something I get behind. So I'm rooting for him, but I do reserve the right to be skeptical.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think for the Pistons... you get the second rounder, so at least Rose isn't walking for nothing in free agency, and you're taking the flyer on Dennis Smith, who, I mean, as you said, Mort, a couple of years ago, he had a pretty solid rookie season with Dallas. He was the 9th overall pick in 2017. Like, the talent was once there, in theory. So, you know, you get a free 3-month look at him before he hits restricted free agency, and then you have matching rights on him, and... based on how his last two seasons have gone, I don't think any team is going to be throwing an eight-figure offer his way.
No. So, you know who Dennis Smith was compared to when he got drafted?
Who?
Derrick Rose.
Oh, there we go. We've come full circle.
And he also had an ACL tear.
There we go. All right. Well, then they just swapped one Derrick Rose for slightly younger Derrick Rose. I like it.
This was old Derrick for young Derrick. There we go. MVP season incoming next year.
Yeah. All right. So that's enough Derrick Rose Thank talk you. For 1 year, hopefully. Let's stay with Detroit briefly, Mort, because now we could talk about some other guys who might be on the move soon. And, you know, we've mentioned this in past episodes, but... because of the play-in tournament, teams might have less incentive to sell off than usual because there are, you know, 10 teams that in theory get to compete for a playoff spot at the end of the year instead of 8. There just might be fewer sellers at the deadline. It's really the teams that you know are just total garbage and have no chance. They could start selling off, and that makes sense. And that brings us back to the Detroit Pistons, who have the NBA's worst record at 5-18 and have absolutely no reason to hang on to any veterans. Like this, we are in full-scale rebuild mode here, as we saw when they traded Andre Drummond for peanuts last trade deadline. So Wayne Ellington is the guy that I've got my eye on this roster. I mean, I'm sure they'd love to move off of Blake Griffin, but that contract is just so big and so bad that I think they're probably better off waiting till next year, at which point I believe he's an expiring. So at least he'll have value in that regard. But Wayne Ellington's a guy who I think, you know, teams should be pretty eager to get if the Pistons do decide to hold a veteran fire sale at the trade deadline.
Of course. I mean, this is a guy who's averaging 12 points a game, shooting the three ball at, was it a 49% rate or something like that? Just insane.
Yeah.
He's a gunner. He's a shooter. And it's the type of guy who can come in for a contender during the playoffs and actually win you a game.
Yeah. Yeah, he is currently currently second in the league in three-point shooting percentage at 49.5%, just 2/1000th of a percentage point behind Joe Harris.
There we go. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he should have fair value. The question to me is, because of his age, you know, what is he worth for a team that's contending? Mm-hmm. Are we talking multiple second rounders, or are we even saying, you know, for maybe a contender that doesn't have a whole lot of shooting, Philly, that we're talking about a protected first rounder down the line that could transform into multiple seconds?
Did the Sixers go back to 2019-2020 all of a sudden? What happened to Seth Curry and Danny Green? They got shooting this year.
Oh, I know. But here's the thing. Danny Green in a playoff series is unreliable.
Yeah.
And you guys are still playing Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, he is definitely a guy who I have my eye on for Philly in particular. It's right. A fair question. What is his value? And we should just address this right off the bat, because it'll be a theme throughout, is that, you know, I think it was Bobby Marks or Windhorst, one of the ESPN guys, wrote an article recently about how so many contenders, so many teams can't trade a first round pick this year because of the Stepien rule. So that's going to limit the number of teams that actually can even offer a first at the deadline, or a 2021 first, or it will limit the number of contenders that even are after some of these guys if they don't have a second or multiple seconds to offer. And if they do have a second, you're a contender, it's going to be, you know, late in the second round unless you have someone else's pick. So it's a fair question, what, you know, given what Derrick Rose just went for, Wayne Ellington, I think, is probably maybe not. I don't think you get first for him. Maybe 2 seconds.
Okay.
Maybe. I mean, 1 second. I guess 1 second's better than nothing for Detroit's purposes. But
right,
I would certainly try to hold out for 2 if I could.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's decent value for a guy that shoots the 3-ball of that extent. So then it just becomes a question of who will get him first.
Yeah.
Because that should be a very doable trade for multiple teams.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking at the trade deadline. I'm talking like right now.
Yeah. He's on a super cheap contract. It's, you know, 1 year, $2.5 million. So I think that sounds like it was just a veteran minimum, actually. So it should be no problem absorbing him for, you know, for any contender. Some teams are well into luxury tax territory, so that's a factor. But otherwise, I cannot imagine that he will be on the Detroit Pistons on March 26th. Or if he is, they really screwed up, because they should just take whatever they could get for him. But I think 2 seconds, or maybe, you know, if it, like, Philly owns the Knicks' second round pick this year, which is not as good as you would have thought it was coming into the year, but it's still, you know, not going to be, it's not going to be top or in like the 50s, most likely.
Right.
So
agreed.
So that could be something. But yeah, so Wayne Ellington, certainly a guy to keep an eye on heading into the trade deadline. Mort, you mentioned Orlando, so let's go there, because I think there's a
I desperately want to get to Orlando, but are we just going to ignore that DeLon Wright should probably be on the table as well?
Oh. If you want Dennis Smith Jr. playing 35 minutes a game, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Look, they're going to be horrible either way. So DeLon Wright is a perfectly fine two-way player who's a great passer. He's developed as a three-point shooter, not really displaying it to the same extent necessarily. 37% it's fine. But I think there's enough value to him that multiple teams could see themselves going, you know what? That would be a fine combo guard to have off the bench for us. Like a contending team. The question is, how do you match salary? Mm-hmm. He's earning, I think, $9 million this year, something along those lines. But that might not be too bad if someone has an expiring contract and then can attach a couple second rounders, I guess.
Yeah, he's $9 million. Sorry, $9 million this year, $8.5 million next year. Yeah. So
that's not bad. Like, that's a fine contract.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the question is, who would have the need for something like that? The Clippers are going to be the first team that comes to mind when we talk about any point guard.
Yeah, and he's more of a combo, but, like, you're right. No, the Clippers could be... That's actually not a bad starting point. I was thinking a little bit off here, maybe, but I could see a team like Denver have use for him.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, if they can make a trade, that makes sense. Because their salary structure is also a little bit funky.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a deal to be made there.
Yeah, I'm looking... So they have Will Barton, but that...
They're not going to move him for right.
Yeah, Jermichael Green, I think, is too important to what they do after the Plumlee and Jeremy Grant losses. Paul Millsap, right. No. Gary Harris. I mean, I guess there could be, like, a larger... Maybe you do something like Will Barton and Gary Harris for Blake Griffin and DeLon Wright. If Denver's just like, what we have going isn't working, so we gotta try something wild. But
oh, that seems like a panic trade. But yeah. No, I mean, there has to be someone else as well. Like, if we're thinking of someone who's on a team, is carrying somewhat debt money, in that extent, like $8 to $9 million, and the team can just offer some second rounders. Who could that be?
Well, I mean, so the...
What are we looking at?
The Clippers do have Lou Williams, who is at $8 million, so they could offer that straight up. The Heat are going to jump to mind for if we're talking just pure salary relief, because they have... I don't think they're giving up Goran Dragic, but they have Iguodala, Myers Leonard, who's now out for the year, and all of these guys have team options in 21-22, so you can effectively treat them as expirings. And then Avery Bradley as well. So, you know, the Heat could offer Myers Leonard and, like, Kendrick Nunn for DeLon Wright.
What about the Celtics and their TPE?
That is certainly another possibility.
I mean, Kemba's knee is a concern.
Yeah.
You can't keep asking Marcus Smart and Jeff Teague to handle everything. Like, you could use another guard in that rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Especially someone who can cover both guard spots, who isn't a bad defender, someone who can score, someone who can rebound, someone who can run the court, but isn't someone who's a high-volume scorer, so he'd actually play well next to Tatum and Brown. I could see that working, and it's not... Like, their TPE is of $28 million, so, you know, they don't have to spend all the $28 million. They can just take someone like DeLon Wright for $9 million.
Right.
That wouldn't even hurt them all that much, you know, cap wise or luxury tax wise.
Yeah, that's look, I mean, their starting five is very good. After that, it gets very spotty very quickly that includes Peyton Pritchard, who's been playing well, but as you said, it's like Jeff Teague, and then it just drops off so fast after that.
No, you glad you brought up Pritchard. I totally forgot to mention him. That's an obvious oversight. Yes, he is there.
Yeah.
But is that enough?
Right. Because otherwise you're relying on, like, Javonte Green. And then, you know, really, if you want to dig deep, Romeo Langford, Carson Edwards. I just don't think you can feel confident about any of those guys, given how little they've played. So, yeah,
so
it's a possibility.
TPE. So a TPE and a 2 seconds. Would that do the trick?
I don't see why not. I mean, again, it depends on what Detroit is hoping to accomplish here. If it really is just full-scale teardown mode. And if they're
They signed like a million centers. I have no idea what they're trying to accomplish.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, if they're comfortable playing Dennis Smith Jr. 35 minutes a night, that's certainly a possibility. The other team that came to mind for me was Brooklyn, just because they have that Dinwiddie, who, you know, he's got the player option in 21-22, but he's effectively just $11 million in dead salary for them this year.
Yeah.
So he'll be a, we'll circle back through a lot of these names for most of these guys. These are kind of just laying out all of the options that these contenders have in terms of who can they give up contract wise to match salary for any bigger name player.
And now we can go to Orlando.
All right. So more the Magic just cannot shake the injury bug. You know, Markel Fultz out for the year, Jonathan Isaac out for the year. Now Aaron Gordon is out 4 to 6 weeks as well. The Magic got off. They were off to a pretty good start. They looked frisky. They looked like, you know, they're at least going to be clearly in the playoffs when they were 6-2 through their first 8 games. And the wheels have completely fallen off since. They have won 3 games. They've gone 3-13 over their last 16 games. So that is, you know, the vultures are certainly starting to circle over the Magic, wondering whether this is time to break this thing apart. I think
Evan... And it is!
I mean, to be fair, we've been saying that for years, but this time it really might be.
Yeah.
Evan Fournier is the one name to monitor. He's on a $17.2 million expiring contract. Nikola Vucevic, the other one, you know, he's $26 million this year, $24 million next year, and then $22 million in 2022-23. So his salary goes down as the cap rises, which gives him a little bit extra value in terms of trades for financially minded owners. So more, find me a home for Evan Fournier.
Oh, well, so could we make a package deal? And I still have to figure out what the exact package will be.
Okay.
But I want to send Evan Fournier back to Denver, and I want him to be accompanied by Aaron Gordon.
Ooh, okay.
And I don't know what the deal is yet, because we need to find a way to match salaries. Obviously, Gary Harris would have to go the other direction, just for salary matching purposes, and I assume Paul Millsap as well.
He's on the 1 year deal, he can veto trades.
Right, he can veto. Of course he can. Yeah. So that's the one thing. He might not want to, but here's the thing. If a team wants to trade you, would you be inclined to just say, no, I want to stay here with people who don't want me? I don't know.
If you're on a team that's going to make the playoffs, and then they're saying we're gonna trade you to a very bad team that's not going to make the playoffs in a state that does not care about COVID at all, I would probably refuse if I were Paul.
Well, because here's the thing. What if, as part of that deal, the Magic is going to just buy him out so he can sign with the Lakers or the Clippers or insert top-tier contender here?
Then the Magic need to be... The Nuggets would need to be sending back a lot of extra value.
Yeah, I agree with that. But if it's Paul Millsap and Gary Harris for Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon, how much more would you need to add?
I mean, I would think...
Because I like Millsap, but he's not that good.
Right.
Anymore.
I think the Magic are giving up the two best players in that trade.
Right, but you just said the Nuggets would need extra compensation because Millsap would go to one of their direct competitors.
Right, yeah. The Nuggets would have to send more. So I'm thinking, I could be off here, but I think they might have to send two firsts. They would have to send this year's, which is not going to be that great, so it's not that big of a loss. And then probably another first, I would think.
To the Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Under the condition that the Magic are buying out Paul Millsap.
Right.
Because then there's no point in that. Like, he's not providing any value for them.
Yeah. So that's the question. Is that reasonable? Is that a fair deal?
I mean, if I'm the Magic and I can get two firsts for those guys, I'd probably do it.
Yeah, right? That's where I'm at, too. Like, because here's the thing. And I know Magic fans will counter back with this. But I don't think they're right in doing so, because Aaron Gordon's contract is no longer as attractive as it used to be, even though it's declining, because the value was in that contract declining every single year by hanging on to him, and now he's going to enter his last year of that deal next season. Mm-hmm. You know, where is the value in a declined year? He'll only have one more, you know, salary decrease from season to season. Okay, that's it. Like if you sent him away 3 years ago or 2 years ago rather, you know, you would have had three off seasons where his contract descended in value, where you could have built around him. Like that chip is gone now, and mm-hmm. he has not ascended to the point where, you know, you and I thought he would.
Yeah.
In fact, he's remained very steady. I mean, he's still a good player. I'm not going to sit here and say he's not. But we thought that there would be a time where he would just break out, right? And that has not happened. And I think maybe a change of scenery, getting him to Denver where he's actually going to be playing with a playmaker, even though that playmaker is the center, which makes no sense. But this is the year 2021, so nothing makes sense. I could see that. I could see that working out.
I could certainly see why Denver would want to do it. Yeah. They would really have to sweeten the pot for the Magic to want to do it.
Okay, but they do that.
I mean, that's the thing. It's tough for, because these guys are on such hefty contracts. You know, it's not as easy to match salaries on contenders. Like if most contenders, if you're paying that much money for someone,
right,
they're either in your rotation. Or, I mean, I guess they're just on such horrific contracts, like an Eric Gordon type, where, you know, you would have to pay the Magic to take that deal back just because it's so much longer than what Fournier's got.
Right.
I mean,
That's part of it, by the way. The fact that Gordon and Fournier are on short deals, Fournier would be is a free agent after this year. Does that give the Nuggets a less incentive to offer up two first-rounders because they can argue back, well, we might lose these guys within the next 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would. I think it's just tough to find homes for either of them for that reason. I mean, you know, again, Boston will be lurking with the TPE. Miami right. will be out there with those expirings as well. You know, I know Fournier has come up as a name for the Sixers, at least on Sixers Twitter, as like, if you're going to trade Danny Green and something, can you upgrade to Fournier?
Oh, I would like that. I actually like that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, like the Raptors could offer Norman Powell and Aaron Baines just a dead salary, but, mm-hmm. you know, they just don't have, there just aren't a lot of contracts in that high teens, low 20s range,
right
around the league that teams are willing to give up. So I think that's going to make it a little tough for Orlando to find takers here. But I agree, both of those guys, they should be taking offers on anyone at this point, especially the Fournier, Gordon, Vucevic tier.
Agreed, very much agreed. And in terms of Vucevic, here's the thing, because I brought up Vuce like after he had the 43-19 game,
mm-hmm.
I went on Twitter and said, we need to talk about him more just as an offensive center. And I had a lot of people, you know, bring up, where should he go? Like, yeah. Could he go to a contender? And this is where it's going to be problematic. Like, you actually touched on this. First and foremost, so many contenders have given up all their draft capital, and that's why they are where they are, because they got top-tier talent in and they gave up all their assets. So actually finding a home for Vucevic at one of like the top tier contenders, that is just not realistic at this point, mm-hmm. because they just don't have the assets. They don't have the young guys. They don't have the draft picks. Now, one team that kept coming up, and we already touched on it, it was Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have two minds of this. First thing is, I think Vucevic, if we want to see him really be on display and utilize his skill set, then Boston is not going to be the way to go, because he's not going to be, you know, the 23-11 guy in Boston. Like, they already have two top tier stars in Tatum and Brown, who's going to give you 25 points each, if not more, every single game. So his game would be, it would be Chris Bosched in a way, right? I mean, he would be more of a spot up shooter and an opportunistic scorer. But this is where the second frame of mind comes in. What if he's good with that? What if he's like, you know what? I just spent a crap ton of years in Orlando not getting anywhere. Now I'm in Boston. And you know what? I'm okay with taking primarily spot-up jumpers and, you know, finishing plays around the rim when I'm being set up. Mm-hmm. I'm okay not milking the clock. I'm okay with not being, you know, the primary option. I'm okay with not averaging 4+ assists by, you know, being giving the ball at the elbow and initiating everything. I'm just okay being, you know, a fully competent starter at the 5 or 4 or whatever you want to call it in this positionless thing that's Boston. And I'm just going to give you what I have. I'm going to give you rebounding. I'm going to give you shooting. I'm going to give you, you know, post offense when it's necessary, like if you slow the game down. If that's the case, like that second scenario, good Lord, should the Celtics go for it. If that's the frame of mind he has, go for it immediately.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, he would be a huge help there. It's just a question of what does Orlando want back? I would think it would be at least one first and probably a pretty promising young prospect. I mean, the Celtics do have recent lottery picks in Langford and Nesmith, so they could offer that plus however many picks it takes. You know, it'd be a great fit there.
Boston fans are going to hate me when I say this, but they should not skimp on the young players.
No, definitely not. And I'm wondering, too, for Vooch, even if a contender can't get him, I wonder if we should be looking at that next tier down of teams that are just hoping to make the playoffs or teams that are in a rebuild and are hoping to take that next step forward. So a team like Charlotte, could they offer Cody Zeller, Malik Monk, Devontae Graham for Vooch? Or
they could. Would Orlando take that?
I mean, probably not, but... I guess Devontae Graham holds less value for them because they have Fultz and Anthony. Yeah. Maybe throw in a pick as well.
Thing is, it's generally tough because I spent that whole day talking to guys on Twitter about this. Mm-hmm. It is actually pretty complicated to find the perfect landing spot for Vooch. Because even if you go down to that second tier of teams... Like they also have spent a lot of assets getting to where they are. Mm-hmm. So there are not necessarily a whole lot available. Now, I do have one thought, and we are going to lose all our Phoenix Suns listeners on that.
Oh, boy.
No, but I mean, I have to put it out there because when I had this debate on Twitter, someone pointed it out. To be fair, that was actually in a Danish group DM, so shout out to the guy who brought that up. but I guess his point is reasonable. What if you go all in if you're Phoenix and you understand that DeAndre Ayton he's really good, but he's a long way from being the guy. I know. And obviously, Orlando would have to compensate for the future potential. So, you know, if you're Phoenix, you're not attaching draft picks or any sort of this. It would be the other way around. Mm-hmm. Maybe not draft picks, but something else. Like, you would have to give up something else if you're Orlando. So Orlando actually pays for the future. And, you know, what can you say here? Like, it's such a warped situation because Phoenix would actually upgrade in the now. Like, they would get better. Like, right now, Nikola Vucevic is a better player than DeAndre Ayton. I feel very comfortable saying that, and as should everyone else.
Yeah.
The question is that even the case a year from now? We don't know.
Right.
And so Phoenix would have to be gambling on if we get Vucevic in and we sacrifice Ayton, then we have to make like a finals push this year. Essentially.
Right.
And like do you make that trade? I personally, if I'm Phoenix, I don't. But I think it's worth having the discussion.
Let me throw a few other teams at you quickly here.
All right.
The Sacramento Kings could use Corey Joseph and Marvin Bagley to get most of the way there for salary matching.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Would that pique Orlando's interest at all?
If you throw in some draft capital, probably, yeah. But not just Joseph and Bagley, no.
Okay. The Spurs have a ton of expirings, and then they also just have a lot of good young players. So you could, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge would probably be the expiring going back, and right. then take your pick of. I mean, you're probably not giving up White or Murray, but Vassell, Lonnie Walker, Keldon Johnson.
So I'm just looking over. Nikola Vucevic is 30 years old. So in San Antonio, he'd be considered like he's 22, right?
Right. He's a rookie, basically. Yeah.
He's a rookie.
Yeah.
No, I think I understand that logic. I think the Spurs need to stay away from old guys now. That's I really fair. Do. Just for a while. I just don't think they need to get in like high volume old guys anymore. I think they need to go the route of the young guys for a while.
Okay, then here's my next best idea.
Yeah.
We can do this two ways because I'm guessing the first way will be affected by poison pill stuff.
Okay.
Pelicans, who are facing increasing pressure with yeah. Ingram and Zion despite being so young. We know Bledsoe, Redick, Lonzo are all available on the market. So you can combine any of those two, basically, and get to Vooch's number. And that would shore up the Magic's backcourt for now as a short-term fix while Fultz is hurt.
Right.
Or, I mean, Steven Adams, again, I think there would be poison pill implications here because he signed the extension. So I don't know how much they would have to include otherwise in terms of salary. But, you know, just as Steven Adams plus they have a million picks from the Drew deal and from the AD deal. So Steven Adams or just Steven Adams plus Lonzo if you want to get, you know, Vooch and someone else. There are a lot of ways to make that trade work, but if they were looking to upgrade in the front court, that could be one way to do so, and I think Vooch would fit
yeah.
better offensively, at least, with Zion.
That one I like. Here's the thing. So friends of the podcast, Mason Ginbergs and Shamit Dua, who was on a couple episodes ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were talking about how they really wanted Lauri Markkanen on that team.
Yep.
It just because it's a big floor stretcher. Well, Nikola Vucevic is the rich man's version of Lauri Markkanen because
yeah.
he can actually do more than just score. He can pass. He can rebound. You know, he can initiate the offense. He's also, frankly, right now, a better shooter. Like, there's a lot to like there. I think Vucevic would immediately, you know, take the big man, the posting big man, out of the paint because of his shooting ability, which would give both Ingram and Zion more room to operate. And with the gravity that Zion creates, then if he's just near the rim, then opposing defenses would almost have to choose, okay, do we double Zion, and who do we double off of? Do we send one away from Ingram, or do we send one away from Vucevic? Which, yeah, game over. That's not going to be pretty for them. That's only going to lead to open shots for the Pelicans.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Pelicans would get so offensively potent if they got Vooch. And while they probably would sacrifice something defensively, because that would be a horrid trio from a defensive perspective, like Vooch, Zion, and Ingram, that's not pretty. They should be able to outscore virtually everyone, I think, in a year or two.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't know how much else they would have to include, whether they're doing an Adam-centric package or a Redick, Lonzo, Bledsoe, whoever, take your pick.
Well, I mean, Orlando would definitely demand Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Kyra Lewis in the other way, and I think they mm-hmm. should hang on to Kyra Lewis for sure. Nikhil, though, I think that's an interesting name, right?
Yeah, he could be. I mean, if you're getting rid of Vooch, if you're the Magic, your offense is just going to go even more into the toilet than it has already.
Right.
Which says a lot. So, yeah, they would just need any semblance of scoring back.
Right. I like a framework with the Pelicans, whatever, like, we decide. Like, just okay. basically sending Vooch to New Orleans is something I could get behind. We just have to figure out a deal. So I'm going to raise the Mason Ginsburg bat signal and find out.
We'll bring him back on. Just do an hour on Vooch and the Pelicans. All right.
Oh, God. Then you know what? A couple years ago, someone complained to us. Remember this? Why we didn't have Pelicans coverage? If we had Mason back for like three times over 2 months just to talk Pelicans, then that dude can no longer complain. I would not take that complaint anymore. Okay.
All right. Let's turn our attention to the Cleveland Cavaliers, Mort, since they have somewhat of a front court glut to clear up as well after they acquired Jared Allen. They did just have it partially relieved because Larry Nance is now out. I think he's 4 to 6 weeks with an injury, which is a huge bummer because he's been having a great season. And in response, the Cavaliers started Andre Drummond with Jared Allen together last night, which is just incredible. They set back basketball at least 100 years.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, they've got Drummond. Like, Allen, I think we can pretty safely assume is, you know, he's a restricted free agent after this year, but age-wise, he lines up with the Sexland backcourt. He's just a really good player. They should want to keep him. So I think he's the center of the future.
Yeah, they're going to match whatever offer that comes in, I have to assume.
Yeah, I would hope so. Which leaves Drummond, who's a free agent after this year on a big contract right now. JaVale McGee, who I can only assume the Nets are praying every day that the Cavaliers buy him out. He's at $4.2 million this year. And then they have Kevin Love, who's still got 2 years left, about $60 million after this season. So, let's find a home for Drummond, because I know he came up yesterday in an article that pissed off Raptors Twitter to no end.
I know. I don't think sending him to Toronto does anyone any good. I mean,
no.
It's such a good question. Like, where do you go with Drummond, right? I mean, theoretically, he's in the prime of his career. Mm-hmm. So if you want to trade him somewhere, it should be with guys who are, you know, somewhat in a similar age group who just needs more talent around them. Theoretically, that would be, and I'm not saying they should do it because I don't think they should, that would be like Zach LaVine. Like, it's someone who's about to turn 26 in Chicago. Like, that duo would actually pair well. Pair well age-wise.
Yeah, yeah,
the Bulls
yeah.
shouldn't do it. The Bulls shouldn't touch it. I'm saying, like, if you have to look at Drummond, you don't want him to go to a team where they're super old, but you also don't want to let him go to a team that's super young. He doesn't fit either camp. Like, I think it's interesting to, like, trying to gauge the market for him because there's so many empty calories with him as well. Not that I buy into that whole notion, but he picks weird spots to be assertive, right? I mean, a team, they'll be down like 15, and that's when he starts to assert himself. It's very weird. I don't know if there's a good partner out there for him specifically where you'll optimize him. I actually thought the Cavaliers, given their design, would actually optimize him, and it hasn't worked out, which I think is on Drummond.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it very, very difficult locating a proper destination for him, unless you kind of go back to the Vucevic talk and you make it like a three-teamer. So Drummond actually goes to Orlando only for like a half-year rental, and then that's it. And then Mo Bamba takes over the year after. I mean, he's just destined to be a free agent, isn't he?
That's certainly an idea.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston always comes up again because of the trade exception.
I wouldn't do that. Also because the trade exception doesn't fit, right?
Right, yeah. He is $300,000 more. So,
right. But I used to be on Drummond Island for Boston. I really did. I'm not anymore.
Wow, that's... Yeah, he's $251,000 too expensive to fit in the trade exception. That sucks. That's wild.
I mean, I just wouldn't do it. I don't think he'd fit in. I mean...
No. The teams that came to mind for me...
Right.
We'll go back to the Knicks briefly. If they are really starting to speed things up, I mean, they have a ton of cap space, so they don't need to worry about matching salary as much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could give up Nerlens Noel, Frankie Smokes, and Kevin Knox and call it a day.
I mean, I'm not high on those guys, but that'd be a haul for Cleveland, given what they gave up for Drummond.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think the Knicks have about, yeah, $17 million or so in cap space. So, you know, Drummond's... Well, I guess you could just do... You could actually probably just do Nerlens and Frankie Smokes, and I think that would be legal.
So you want to bury Mitchell Robinson even more?
I don't want to, but I'm just saying, if the Knicks are fast-forwarding on this timeline, that's certainly an option.
Actually, I know that we're all supposed to hate that idea, but just to play devil's advocate, they probably would grab every rebound.
Yeah. I'm half joking, but half not. I mean, I don't totally hate the idea for the Knicks.
You have Drummond and Randle starting, both of whom are great individual rebounders, and then coming off the bench is Mitchell Robinson, who, like, they would have a lot of size and a lot of rebounding capabilities. Now, that's not necessarily going to transfer into wins, but mm-hmm. they would get a ton of boards and just squeeze out additional possessions. Because yeah. Drummond, I mean, through all of his faults, is a great offensive rebounder. He will get you more possessions.
Yeah.
And Lord knows RJ Barrett could use that.
Gotta keep that shooting percentage up somewhere.
No, but I mean, I don't hate it. I don't hate it as much as I thought I would.
Yeah. So the other thing, the other team that came to mind for me was the Dallas Mavericks.
No, don't do that to Luka. Come on.
They could do James Johnson and Maxi Kleber. Oh,
God. No, don't you dare. Don't you dare. I understand that Maxi Kleber has had a bad year. I recognize that. For some reason, he's almost exclusively shooting three-pointers, and it's super weird. But... No, right? No. Porzingis has to be their five. Right?
I mean, maybe Porzingis is in the Anthony Davis camp of he doesn't want to play the five during the regular season.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying they could get to the salary pretty easily. And they are... I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the Mavericks are in need of some sort of kick in the ass. I mean, they're 11-14.
A kick in the ass? Is that a guy who doesn't care?
I wouldn't necessarily hit Drummond with that label on a, you know, especially if he's playing with Luka.
You know what? That's actually a fair point. But I will say this, though. Colin Sexton is legitimately good. Yeah. So if he can't be bothered to really, like, put his best foot forward alongside Colin Sexton, you know, I recognize that Luka is much better, but do you think that makes a difference? And it's fair. I'll take that back in terms of not caring. I'll take that back, but you have to agree with me that he does look demotivated on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. There are some games where he looks completely checked out, for sure. But I'm wondering if, you know, with Luka in particular, given how good of a passer he is, like, has Andre Drummond played with a guy like that before? I can't think of one off the top of my head.
No. I can already answer because he spent so many years in Detroit, and primarily it was Reggie Jackson.
Yeah.
And even before that, no, he never had a playmaker of this magnitude. And in Cleveland, I love Colin Sexton. I think Darius Garland is going to turn into something, but both of those guys are just not. They're not sniffing the caliber of playmaker that Luka is. No, he has never in his NBA life played with someone like that. Not even close.
Right. So, I mean, maybe that maximizes Drummond. Like, of course, he is very limited in what he does offensively. He is not going to be a high-volume three-point shooter. He has attempted 8 this year, hit exactly 0 of them. You know, he's mostly an around-the-basket, just dunk, offensive rebound, put back. You know, run pick and roll, that's great. But with Luka, that could actually be a pretty good weapon. I could see Luka really weaponizing him as a lob threat as well.
You're basically saying And I don't disagree with you that Drummond has to become what Dwight Howard is currently, but just on a more permanent basis and a more high, you know, high volume role.
Dwight Howard, just all he does is offensive fouls and miss free throws. So
okay,
it's a slightly higher bar, but like a better version of what James Harden did to DeAndre Jordan in Brooklyn.
All right, I mean, so coming into this, I was just a clear no. Now I'm a soft no, but you could probably talk me into considering the possibilities depending on what they gave up, and plus they could just let him walk after this year, so it wouldn't be right. A long commitment, and if they got him for the same, you know, sort of a, you know, value that Cleveland gave up, which is like Brandon Knight in a second round or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Okay, but no way do you trade Maxey. I'm not with it.
Okay. What about Dwight Powell instead?
Yeah, that I'm with.
Okay, so like James Johnson, Dwight Powell in a second, because they owe the 2021 and 2023 first to New York.
No. If you're looking at what they gave up for Drummond in Detroit. I'm not giving you that second if I'm giving you James Johnson and I'm giving you Dwight Powell. Dwight Powell is actually good.
Okay.
And so is James Johnson. I'm not doing that.
Dwight Powell would actually have value as a backup big man behind Jared Allen for Cleveland too, I think.
Right. If it's that type of deal, James Johnson and Dwight Powell for Andre Drummond, okay. And look, by the way, Cleveland fans right now are barfing. Because they know that he's scoring like 18.5 points, grabbing 14 plus rebounds. They want to see more of a return for that, but I don't think the value is there.
Well, I mean, we're going to revisit this talk 100 times between now and the trade deadline, but between the number of teams that can't trade first round picks this year and the number of teams that just aren't able to match that big of a salary, it gets really hard to find that value. Like,
yeah,
maybe you can get a first rounder, but I don't think so, because he was putting up similar numbers in Detroit.
And that's kind of my point.
Yeah.
Don't you think that the trade from Detroit to Cleveland is going to affect the trade value for like moving forward? Like, you don't want to be the GM who actually goes, oh yeah, I'll give a first rounder and something good for Andre Drummond when he, you know, a year ago went from. You know, was traded for Brandon Knight in a second. Like, right. I think just what he was acquired for last year, I think that's going to play a major role in his market value right now. I don't think you want to be the GM who gives up too much after what he fetched the first time around.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point. And from Cleveland's perspective, again, unless you're like terrified that Jared Allen is going to get a max deal and you aren't going to match that, which neither of those I think are going to happen, maybe you keep Drummond around just as insurance and, you know, keep his bird rights on your books, and like, God forbid, if you lose Jared Allen, you could still re-sign him. But otherwise, I think Jared Allen gives you enough certainty at center that you know Drummond is going to walk this offseason and you just need to get whatever you can for him. So even if it is just an expiring James Johnson, would at least add some veteran toughness to your team. And, you know, a guy like Dwight Powell, who could have long-term value as a backup behind Jared Allen and could fill in if Allen ever was forced to miss time. Like, that's actually not terrible value for Cleveland.
Is Andre Drummond the next Hassan Whiteside in terms of having great stats, but the market is going to dry up real quick?
Just no one wants him. It's possible.
I think people would want him for the right money, but of course, it only takes one team to panic, and this coming off season is going to be horrendous because no one's there. That market is dry, like super dry. He's like, some team could definitely reach for him, but what's his contractual value? One thing is we're talking about his trade value, but what is he worth financially?
I cannot imagine. I mean, knowing Whiteside went for a min deal.
Right.
Which, with all due respect to every NBA team, I think he's worth more than a min.
I know, I would agree.
I know there's the, you know, attitude issues that have dogged him for a while, but, you know, would I give him a full non-taxpayer mid-level? No. But, you know, a couple million dollars of that? Yes. So, like, I think Drummond is probably looking at, you know, probably the non-taxpayer is his realistic ceiling, unless a team just goes nuts. I mean, maybe a Charlotte or a New York or someone like that does just splurge on him, but
they Charlotte should. Yeah, Charlotte probably should if it's the... Yeah, if it's like $10 million a year, right?
Yeah.
If they even can. They'll probably be limited to the non-tax MLE, right?
Well, Cody Zeller comes off their books this year, so...
So they have to find a way to stay as an above the cap team.
I'm saying they might have... I think they're just going to have enough cap room. If they only have $92 million... Including, I mean, their guaranteed total on the books right now is $77.8 million for next season. So they should be a team with cap room this offseason.
Yeah. My God. All right.
We just rehomed Andre Drummond twice. Good for us. Going to Dallas now and then Charlotte this summer.
We built him a market.
Yeah, there we go.
So basically, his agent is going to reach out to us and say, there you go, boys. The $1 million you've been talking about for 5 years, here you go.
We're getting 50% of Andre Drummond's next contract? That seems
That was harsh. Okay.
All right. Well, there were some other guys that I wanted to get into, but we're running short on time. So we have to, I think we got to end with the guy who came up yesterday in an article from Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report titled, "Are Kyle Lowry and the Toronto Raptors Headed for a Divorce? One Western Conference executive said, there is a time capsule for everybody and everything, and it's probably just time to move on." So, I mean, we've been keeping an eye on the Raptors, and right now, they are, you know, moving up the standings a little bit. They have recovered somewhat from their slow start. They're 11-13, currently a half game ahead of the Knicks in the standings. But Kyle Lowry is a free agent this summer. You know, all of the buzz on Twitter today has been that Kyle Lowry put his house up for sale, ignoring the fact that they are playing their season in Tampa, so he can't even go to his house if he wants to. But, you know, you probably don't put that house up for sale if you think you're coming back this re-signing with the Raptors this summer. So, Mort, do you think it's time for the Raptors to seriously start entertaining offers for Kyle Lowry?
No, I think it's fair to entertain offers, and if you get something you like, go for it. But if they don't get something, you know, of significant value, I would look at it and go, I would rather have the on-court production instead. I mean, this is a guy who's looked at as a lifer in Toronto. He's going to get his jersey retired there. And if not, something is dreadfully wrong. So, of course, he will. I can't imagine them being at that stage where they go, oh, we just need to get something for him. I don't think that's where they are. I think they understand what he means to the fan base, and I think that matters. I really think that, especially in Toronto, they spent such a long time building that fan base, and then when they won the championship, it just solidified them. I think that carries way more value than we are used to talking about in terms of NBA team and NBA fanhood and all these things. So I just don't think they're in a rush. Of course, if someone comes in with just an insane offer for a 34, almost 35-year-old Kyle Lowry, and you go, well, holy hell, this can help shape our future, then yes, of course. But you don't go out and actively shop him with the mindset that, whoa, we have to get something for him. And honestly, I probably changed my opinion on this because I used to say the other thing. I used to say, yeah, like you just need to get something for him. But I'm pivoting back because of the fan angle. I think he's just so much more important to the whole culture that you're not actively shopping him at any point. You're taking calls, but you're not actively looking for a deal.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So some of the teams that came up in this article, one was the Miami Heat. One Eastern team official told Jake Fisher that he's a very Miami-type player. And, you know, Miami is another team coming off of the finals appearance. It's gotten off to a very slow start this season, 9-14, tied with the Bulls for 11th in the East. Very exciting stuff for them. I mean, they've been hit hard by injuries and COVID. Jimmy Butler's out for a while. Tyler Herro's out for a while. You know, now Myers Leonard's out for the year. Avery Bradley's out for a couple weeks. Miami has the expirings that we mentioned earlier. Dragic, Iguodala, Leonard, Bradley. They also have Herro, Duncan Robinson, who's going to be a free agent this summer, and then Precious Achiuwa, their rookie first-round pick this year. So they have the pieces to get a deal done here, Mort. Do you think they should be going hard after him?
I mean, I would agree that Kyle Lowry is a Miami player. I mean, he is hard-nosed. He is just competitive as hell. I wonder if he'll clock in at the right body fat percentage. Like, he's slimmed down. Like, sometimes he'll bounce back a little bit here and there. Sure. No, I think he would be... He and Jimmy, despite being both a little bit old, I think would be super fun. But if you're Miami, you also have to wonder, you know, how much longer can Kyle keep it up? Again, he'll be 35 in... let's just see. I actually closed down his player profile, but it's like really soon.
Yeah, I want to say May, if I'm remembering that off. March.
March. Oh, next.
The trade deadline, he turns 25. Happy birthday, Kyle.
Oh, if only he turned 25. 35.
35, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so you have to wonder, what do you give up for that? Well, like, hey, I'm giving up Tyler Herro for a 35-year-old Kyle Lowry? No! That shouldn't be in the cards if you're Miami. Why the hell would it be?
Would you be willing to include both of Precious and Robinson along with salary filler?
No.
Interesting.
I don't think I would. Well, so here's the thing. I'm of the opinion that Duncan Robinson, I think he'll be retained. I know everyone is trading him.
He's a restricted free agent, so they'll have matching rights on him. It's just a question of how much, you know, knowing what Joe Harris just went for, I think Duncan Robinson's floor this summer feels like it's probably 4 years, $80
million. Correct. And that's why people are trading him in their fake trades. They say, they basically reached the conclusion that Miami will be unwilling to pay that. Well, I don't think they are. I don't think they are unwilling to pay that. I think given that they saved up for this summer, they saved up for like Giannis and Bradley Beal or whatever. Giannis is off the table. So many other guys are off the table. Beal is still a very fluid situation. And to be perfectly honest, I am not sure that there isn't a better trade package out there. I mean, I'm just saying, if I'm Miami and I'm getting into the whole Bradley Beal sweepstakes, even if I offer Duncan Robinson, Tyler Herro, Precious Achiuwa, is that enough? Or would a team like the Pelicans, who might offer up all the picks that came in from LA, plus some young guys, mean, so I think the Miami Heat could just be building on what they have, right? So they could slowly and gradually pivot into Herro, Robinson, bam. You know, when Jimmy ages out a little bit. I'm just not sure that I would want to give up something of significance for Kyle, even though Kyle would definitely make the Miami Heat better right now. But will he make the Heat better next year? Or the year after? I don't know. He might. I might be totally off here. Like, he might. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't know that. But what I will know is Tyler Herro is going to get better. Precious is going to get better. Bam is going to get better. Duncan Robinson, for all intents and purposes, is going to get better. Why wouldn't I want to lean into that?
Yeah, and I mean, Duncan Robinson, they might be nervous about how much he'll get as a free agent, but again, they'll have matching rights on him.
Right.
And if they do have their eye on a Bradley Beal or a star yet to be named in trade talks, he could have more value as a bigger salary, so they don't have to include, you know, whoever, like Kelly Olynyk, Andre Iguodala, whatever
right
salary they need just for matching. Like, him being on a bigger contract, he could be the salary matching piece, and then you can include Tyler Hero, Precious Achiuwa, whoever you pick. Well, I guess they don't have a first-round pick this year. That should factor into the calculation as well, I think. I mean, I think your instinct is probably right. I don't think Miami would be willing to include both of those guys. If it's Precious, you know, take your pick, whatever you need for the salary filler, Leonard, Iggy.
Right.
Yeah, let's say Precious, Leonard, Iggy, and they've traded all of their seconds, basically, and they owe 2021 and 2023 firsts already. So the earliest they could send is 2025, which, you know, probably appeals to Toronto because you figure they're going to be good for a bit longer until Jimmy ages out. It's interesting. It's certainly something I think Toronto would have to consider.
Yeah.
The other team that I would go back to is New Orleans, just knowing all those guards are up. You know, I don't think the Raptors should have a ton of interest in Eric Bledsoe, but a J.J. Redick-Lonzo Ball package actually could be interesting.
Really? It could?
Well, if you include picks, too.
That's a pretty essential part. How many picks?
Take your pick. I mean, they have... I don't even know how many they have.
Okay.
All of their own firsts, plus Lakers this year. They have 2 seconds coming this year as well. They have a swap with the Lakers in 23. Lakers in 24 or 25. They get to pick which one.
Yeah.
Also have 25 and 27 from Milwaukee and 24 and 26 swap rights with Milwaukee. So
This is where Kyle gets problematic, right? Or not Kyle, but Kyle's situation, you know, age-wise. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a young team, yeah, sure. Like, if you're New Orleans and that's a young team, obviously you would want someone really good as Kyle to come in and be like the veteran leader and give you a couple of good years before he starts to decline. But secretly, you're kind of thinking, do we really want to give up picks?
Right.
Do we really want to give up first-rounders for a guy who's 35? Like, that feels wrong. it feels very, very wrong. I mean, I agree that he's a good player, but if first-rounders are up, like, if they are in several trade proposals that the Raptors are getting, and they aren't just fake first-rounders, and they aren't just, you know, projected to be 25 or later, absolutely, you should listen. You should absolutely listen. But I just wonder if teams out there are willing to give that up for Kyle. Again,
yeah,
one of the most underrated players in the NBA. I get that. That is not lost on me. But Brian, 35. I mean, next March, He's like me. He's old.
What if we do J.J. Redick, Lonzo Ball?
Right.
Either the 2025 or 2027 first from Milwaukee, because both of those lost value immediately when Giannis resigned.
Oh, that's good.
And then, they have second rounders this year from Cleveland and Washington. Give up the Washington one. That's, you know, probably top, like, in the 31 to 35 range.
Now, that's a good one. Because that's essentially a late first.
Yeah, except it's not going to have the guaranteed salary.
Which is an asset.
Right.
I kind of like that. The thing is, I don't think the Raptors would look at that and go, yeah, that's what we're willing to move him for. I think they value him so much more for all the things that I mentioned at the top.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm saying. He is incredibly difficult to move for all these reasons.
But from the Raptors' perspective, like I totally agree in terms of how they value him, and they might just want to ride this thing out and see what happens this summer, see if they can re-sign him. They might not care unless they're like totally blown away by an offer.
Right.
But, you know, I know Lonzo has struggled this year, but I don't think he holds zero value.
No. He doesn't, but he's not the, you know, $20 million player that everyone thought he'd be, I think is fair.
But that could work in Toronto's favor. If you're acquiring him now and then you get matching rights on him and he doesn't get the huge offer that we all would have expected last year.
Right. Like, and then he turns into something.
Yeah, because, I mean, he and Fred VanVleet could actually fit pretty well together, I think.
That's true. That's actually true. It really depends on how the Raptors would value Ball moving forward.
Yeah.
God, this is actually a pretty interesting thought experiment just with Kyle Lowry, right? I mean, he's so good, but he's such a difficult player to place on other teams, and because he has the huge salary and the emotional ties with the Raptors, I almost want to pivot and say maybe they should just leave Kyle low and trade Pascal instead.
Well, I'm going to stop you before we lose all our Raptors listeners.
Oh, come on, that was a joke. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's a good place to wrap up. This will obviously not be our last trade-related pod between now and the March 25th trade deadline, I think. You know, there have been some predictions that it'll be somewhat quieter than usual because of all of this play-in tournament and just weird COVID season in general. But, again, I would not be surprised to see any of the guys we mentioned today, and we'll have a few others that we could bring up in the coming days and weeks as well.
Right.
So, you know, keep your ear to the ground. I think we're in for a wild couple weeks ahead. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.